Hello, I'm Katie Piper, and welcome to my podcast, Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. Each episode, I'll meet an amazing person with an incredible story who faced adversity and came through the other side to inspire others. I'm joined in the studio today by a woman who has been through some of the toughest things that life can throw at you. A hugely successful presenter, she came to fame 20 years ago when her nude image was projected onto the Houses of Parliament. She went on to host Top of the Pops, The Big Breakfast and Live and Kicking, amongst other shows, and is currently filming a BBC documentary. I'm going to let her tell us all about her life more recently. It is Gail Porter. Welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Do you know what? Hi, I'm Gail Porter.
Hello.
I'm from Edinburgh, and it's so wonderful to be with Katie today. Thank you so much for having me. And we have met in a couple of situations.
Yeah.
I'm a big admirer of yours, and you are a very wonderful person. And so thank you very much for having me.
I love that your intro was about me. Let's talk about you. It's the episode about you. I mean, I'm always drawn to your story for lots of different reasons. And I'm totally making assumptions here, and I always assume, because it's a visual thing, alopecia, that people always want to talk to you about alopecia. And the reason I'm drawn to your story isn't alopecia, and it's actually like these parallels of our lives of you were kind of in a similar world to me once upon a time that was based on kind of aesthetics and glamour, and it was kind of, I don't know if taken from you is the right word, or it changed, but almost very quickly. And I always separate my lives into two. And I don't know if you have the same thing, but I always relate to you, and I could be totally wrong in that.
Do you know what? I don't know how to sort of relate this to you, but you are amazing. What you went through has got nothing to do with what I went through. I lost my hair.
It's all relative.
You went through a horrendous, like, horrible thing that happened to you because of someone.
It's the loss, isn't it? It's
I
the
know,
emotions.
But you are way stronger than me, my
no,
friend.
It's not a competition.
No, but you win. You win. But, I think, do you know what? I've got to that stage now that the older I get, and my daughter's 17 now, and you've got your...
Yeah, I've got two girls, yeah.
I know.
And they're young.
But you just have to say to them every single day, do you know what? We rock. Mm. We absolutely rock. Doesn't matter what happens, you lose your hair, you have someone being mean to you. The fact that you've asked me to come on to this, I was a bit overwhelmed. I was like,
I thought you wouldn't come. I was like, she won't come. She's probably fed up with doing interviews. She won't want to be on the podcast.
Oh my God, I could not think of anyone nicer to sit and chat to.
You know, alopecia isn't everything you are. There's so many layers to you. And actually, when I kind of read up about you, I think it's really hard what you've been through with the hair loss, but that's not everything you've been through. You've been through lots of other things that maybe aren't as visual.
Yeah, I've just finished a documentary for BBC One, which is all about mental health.
What's it going to be called?
It's called Gail Porter, Mental Health and Me. You know, sometimes you go to the doctors and they'll go, well, you've got bipolar. Oh, no, you've got this. No, you've got that. And then they come out with like five different diagnoses. Mm-hmm. And then they go home and they think, well, what am I?
Yeah.
I don't know. So this whole documentary was just to sort of speak to people and go, do you know what? You don't need a title.
Right.
But also,
were those people sectioned that you were with? Or
no,
were
no, no. These were just like people with
in the
doctors.
Community.
And
right.
Yeah, there was some that were sectioned. Yeah. There was like, it was a whole array of different people.
Right.
For me personally, because, you know, I was sectioned.
I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
When was that then?
I was sectioned in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Voluntary or involuntary?
Involuntary.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Basically, I went to Hampstead Heath and I phoned up an ex-boyfriend and I said, you know what? I don't know what I'm doing. My mind is not helping me. I don't know. And instead of phoning a doctor, he phoned the police. And then the police came and picked me up and they said, how are you doing? And I said, I don't know. Mm. And so, yeah, they took me to the Royal Free Hospital, which was in Belsize Park. Mm-hmm. And then I was a little bit aggressive.
Yeah, understandably though. That's,
because I was a wee
that's,
bit...
That's real mental health though. It's not all fluffy and nice posters. It is aggressive and...
Well, I just got a wee bit angry with everyone, just thinking, mm-hmm. does no one understand what I'm going through? Mm-hmm. And then instead of like calling my doctor or, you know, a family, they just said, do you know what, we're going to lock you up for 28 days.
How frightening.
Yeah, it was terrifying. And I got in there and, it was just like the oddest thing ever.
What a huge loss of control.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was like, you can't talk to anyone, you can't do anything, you are locked up for 28 days.
So it's not that long to be sectioned, is it? It's just a short month. I'm just thinking, you know, I've had mental health problems. I've been in treatment for a long time. I've had diagnosis.
And so what were your diagnosis?
I've been diagnosed with PTSD, extreme PTSD.
Well, of course. I mean, you went through the most horrific thing I could possibly ever imagine.
So it was where, you know, I wasn't admitted, but I had agoraphobia. I couldn't leave the house, depression, anxiety. So, you know, I do understand and I do know that 28 days, okay, it's intense because you're in a secure unit with professionals, but...
No one spoke to me.
Right.
I didn't see a doctor.
Well, tell us about
days.
It because we don't know about... Like, no, we, so we know, but we don't know. You know. Come on, tell us.
Well, what happened was when I went in there, they said, oh, there's no doctors available. So I was in there 28 days in a room with a guy that sat outside my door to make sure I was not going to kill him.
Yeah.
I was never going to do anything like that, but you've got that. And that was it. No doctors, no nothing. 28 mm-hmm. days and you just sit there.
So you actually weren't in any kind of treatment. You were
No. It was just like...
To prevent you harming yourself.
Oh, yeah. So I know. Really, I mean, it was... I met some wonderful people when I was in there.
Still in touch with them now?
Yeah, a few of them. I met like an amazing designer, a film director. We were all just like shoved in and not given the care. So I think that's the reason I wanted to write about it and talk about it. Mm. Because there are people that actually genuinely need someone to talk to them. Whereas I didn't get it. It didn't really bother me. I was just like, oh, do you know what? It's another Gail day.
So what happened on discharge? Like, were you kind of prepped for discharge? It's going to happen
No, I went into, there was 12 doctors turned up on one day. We hadn't seen any of them the whole time. So they all turn up and they just looked at me and everyone was like writing wee notes down and everything. And they said, oh, we're really sorry. You shouldn't have been here. I was like, sorry. And they said, well, you can go now. But when I went in, I was given like tablets, like nonstop. I don't know how you did. You get given?
I didn't because so obviously for me, when I was admitted to hospital, it was on a burns unit, and then I was in a coma, and then as soon as I woke up, I had a psychiatrist straight away. So I was in like everyday therapy. And I was discharged after 3 months, and then I came back twice a week for therapy. And I'm still in trauma therapy now. And you know, I haven't taken meds, but that's not I'm an anti-meds person. But I have had a lot of issues and a lot of problems, and I still do. So I have a burns charity, and lots of the people that I work with and I'm friends with do take meds, and it's given them a brilliant recovery. So
I don't take meds at any point.
I think it's a very personal decision, and it's a medical decision because meds do save a lot of people's lives. You know, so I don't feel like I could take the stance of certain people should or shouldn't, because who is anyone to kind of.
No, I think it's a personal thing. I mean, I was given it when I was sectioned.
Yeah.
And do you know what I took it? The reason I took it, I just wanted to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Because I suffer from insomnia, and then suddenly they say you're a little bit crazy.
Mm.
And I was just like, do you know what, just give me whatever. And now that I'm, I don't always say back to normal, but, you know, I'm living my own life. I don't take anything whatsoever.
So after that discharge, you went back into the community, and then did you ever have any kind of diagnosis?
Oh my gosh, I think I had about 4 or 5.
Right.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel any fitted you or
no, not whatsoever? I just think, do you know what? I'm happy, and I've gone through bits and pieces, but you know, you can give me whatever label you want, but it's never going to sit with me.
And this is back to the doc you were talking about. You actually don't believe in that. So me and you, we have a similar part. I mean, I don't even know. I know you don't like labels, but, you know, the climate has changed now. Like, we've got Love Island. We've got people go on telly. They can drink on telly. They can have sex on telly. But back in the day when... Are you the same? I'm nearly 36. How old are you?
48.
God, you look good. Okay, I thought you were the same age as me. Okay. We're kind of that era of, like, you know, you were an FHM model, and back then, kind of like showing your bum was quite risky. Back in the 90s?
1999. Just to be honest with
you. Gail was a glamour model or a lads model? Like,
no, what, I worked on Top of the Pops. I was a TV presenter and a writer, and then FHM said to me, would you like to do a quick photo shoot? We've got no money. It's not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so we all had a few glasses of champagne, and then they took a picture of my bottom and they said, we're never going to use it.
This is like a Me Too story now. See, I didn't know any of that.
So what happened was I was told it was not going to get used. And then I woke up in the morning in my tiny little flat in Kilburn, mm-hmm. in London, and there was a picture of my bottom on the Houses of Parliament.
Mm. It was projected onto the side of the building.
It was projected, and it was illegal. So what happened was there was people that worked for FHM that used my image that I hadn't been paid for, mm-hmm. and at midnight, they projected it for 1 minute. They called the press. So press were all there. Took all the pictures.
Huge publicity stunt then.
And then I saw it the next day, and I just remember my mum phoning me up in the morning. She's going, oh my God, what have you done now? I was like, oh my gosh.
But I guess you probably didn't even know what she was talking about, because you
I had no clue.
Yeah, you had no clue. You were...
So I was like in the bathroom, brushing my teeth, and then I was watching the news. Well, I was listening to the news, and they were like, blah, 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 Gail Porter. And I came out of the bathroom going, BBC News? Are you serious?
And you were a household name. Big Breakfast, Live and Kicking, Top of the Pops. You know, you were one of, you know, I probably was at school watching you as, you know, one of the presenters. How did you feel about the stunt at the time?
I think I was a bit embarrassed more than anything, because I don't know. It was just, I was embarrassed that I didn't have the chance to say to my mum and dad, this is going to happen. Mm. And I learned the same way that they did. We learned by watching on the telly. I just felt like, do you know what? They could have just said to me, we're going to do this, but they didn't. My dad still doesn't really talk about it.
Right, yeah.
You know, your daughter's bottom.
Yeah, yeah.
He probably saw it. Yeah, obviously he saw it when I was born, but he doesn't want to see it when I'm he doesn't want to see it now.
What did it do for your career at that time?
It was a really difficult thing, because it was like, there was a lot of people that were they thought it was just a horrible glamour girly type thing to do. And then there was other people that said, you know what, you do what you want to do and you're great and you're sticking up for your female rights and you've got a nice bottom. So it was, it was 50-50. Mm. I got a lot of work, and also I worked with a lot of magazines, and I worked with a lot of magazines that talk about, you know, sexuality and stuff like that. So I got to say my part.
Mm, not just a pretty face.
Well, I don't think I've got a pretty face. I think it was a pretty bottom.
No, it was the whole package. It still is.
Well, a lot of people don't know about my sexuality. They don't know anything about anything. So it's kind of like, it was quite nice to just go, you know, you don't know about me.
Mm. What sort of place were you in personally then? Were you in a good place or a bad place? Or
I think that I've always been in a mixed up place, if that makes sense. I always think I'm extremely lucky in all the jobs that I've ever done, but I've never felt totally comfortable in my own skin, even when, you know, I had my hair and, you know, I had great things happening for me. There was always something in my heart that was just kind of missing a bit.
So you mean like an imposter syndrome feeling, or just a void to be filled? Or
I don't know. I just always wanted someone to like... it's very difficult to explain. It's like, you know, when I just want to be loved unconditionally. Mm. And it never really happened.
With your parents or...?
Well, just with anyone, really. Mm-hmm. you know, there was always kind of like, do this, do that, do that. I just want someone to come home and go, do you know what? You rock. And I was like, do I? Do I?
Yeah.
I'm needy. My daughter always says to me, Mama, you're needy.
I disagree. Like, no, I think it's a basic need. It's a human basic need that we all look to have fulfilled. I don't think that's particularly extra to want acceptance, to want pure love. Like, is that not what babies are born into wanting?
Oh, exactly. Do you know what? I love everything and everyone. Well, not everyone, but do you know what I mean? I'm probably like you. I just think that when you love someone or you love something, I am unconditional. I will do anything for you.
But that's pure, and that's right. I don't see that as needy. I mean, when I look at your story, and this is why I make the comparisons of me and you. So, like, you know, obviously, I'm a few years younger than you, and so my opinion of Gail Porter was like, wow, I'd love to look like that. She's beautiful. I bet everything's okay in her life. And now, like, in hindsight, now I'm an older woman with some life experience. I know that sometimes when you're famous for your looks, and when there's so much emphasis placed on your aesthetics, and when you're a presenter and you're popular and you're working in that world, it's a tough gig to stay like that, when everyone aspires to you like that and sees you like that, is not sustainable because it's not real life. You know, you touched on the airbrushing. You know, it's like a part of you that the world sees and you show, but it's not the full picture. And it's incredible pressure to stay on that pedestal and be that person. And, you know, obviously, you know, just from meeting you can tell there's so much to you. There's all different facets to you. You're obviously very intelligent, empathetic, very deep. And it's not just your bum.
Did you have a moment when you suddenly just thought, yeah, I'm on it now, after everything that happened? Because obviously it must have, I mean, I can't even imagine what you went through. But there must have been a moment when you just thought, you know what, I'm owning this.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it was more trying to, like, have an adult life, like dating, a sex life, and to feel
oh my God,
pretty.
What's that like? I've not had one of them for ages.
I'll ring you when it happens.
All seven.
But it was the real, you know, it's nice when your parents tell you you're pretty and your friends, female friends tell you and everything like that. But it was like trying to go back into the adult world and the realisation of there is a lot of rejection when you know, like lots of like women's mags will empower you and do shoots of you. But real life in the bars and stuff, not everybody wants to like snog you and get your number. So I suppose it got to the point where I was like, this is my life. And you must have experienced this on social media when everyone's like, have you tried aloe vera?
I think my favorite one was like, oh my gosh, Gail, you should put vinegar and garlic on your head.
Yeah.
And I was like, seriously, I can't get laid and you want me to stink as well?
I mean,
you serious?
I've had all the aloe vera Texas and I'm just like,
I'm like, no.
Hun, thanks for the recipe, but my face did melt. And I'm not sure that aloe vera from Holland & Barrett will restore that.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You may have heard of the podcast Juicy Scoop. Wondered what it is? Why aren't you listening? Well, I'm its host, created it, been doing it for 7 years. I'm Heather McDonald of Juicy Scoop with Heather McDonald. Now, I could tell you why you should be listening to my show, but my listeners wanted to write the ad for me, and here are some of the things they said. Not your regular Juicy podcast. Catch up on all the juicy topics from Hollywood and pop culture to true crime and beyond. Heather McDonald's Juicy Scoop always has great guests, great laughs, and great gossip. It's a comedian's take on the hottest headlines. Juicy Scoop is the pop culture news you want to hear. No BS, no filter, no filler. Raw, real, and in the moment. Throw in the hilarity of amazing comedians that you will instantly be obsessed with, a juicy crime story, and a dash of normal life in LA moments, and you've got yourself an amazing week of Juicy Scoop. 2 episodes every week, every Tuesday and Thursday. It will never let you down.
The people that don't know, can you talk a little bit about your hair journey? Because you have this amazing kind of journey of empowerment and being authentically you. And
What happened was I did or I had lots of long blonde hair when I was younger. And then I had the most beautiful daughter who turned 17 last week.
How?
And I know, how does that even happen? And I was working in America on a program called Dead Famous. Mm-hmm. And I think it was like, we were in Las Vegas and we were looking for, I think we were looking for Elvis, as you do.
Classic.
You know? Yeah, exactly. You know, the normal job that everyone has. And I was with my ex-partner, was a cameraman, and I woke up in the morning and he's like, Gail, there's just hair everywhere. It's on the floor, it's in the bed.
How old were you at this point?
So Honey was 2. So yeah, 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
Right.
And I was like, oh, wow, okay. And it's like, your hair's falling out. And within 4 weeks...
That's quick.
I was completely bald. And my ex-husband was in my flat and my daughter was with him. So I phoned up and I said, hi, it's me. I'm in Vegas. Just finished my job. I'm totally bald. And he's like, well, that's just a stupid joke. And I was like, no, it's not a joke. I don't have any hair. I've got no eyelashes. I've got no eyebrows. I'm kind of freaking out, but I'm going to like be extremely positive. But you have got to tell our daughter.
Did you tell production? Because obviously you were getting up and going to work every day.
No, they gave me a hat.
Okay.
So they like covered my head up with a, I got a scarf, I got a hat. But I just said to him, I said to Dan, I was like, you have to just tell our daughter because I don't want her to. I remember when my dad had moustache when I was about 6.
Yeah.
And I freaked out. I was like, you got facial hair. And then I'm turning up with like absolutely no hair whatsoever.
But I feel like 2 is so innocent and young. I feel like she wouldn't batter an eye. Well,
she did not. So no. I got on, it was a Virgin airplane. And I was crying my eyes out just thinking, I don't want to feel sorry for myself because there's a lot worse things that go on. But the only thing I was worried about was my daughter.
Of course you were.
Seeing me and just thinking, wow, you know.
And it was so rapid, you know.
1 minute she's got loads of hair and the next minute she's turning up bald. So
it's an identity thing. It's not a vanity thing. It's
It was just, you know, I was thinking, will she recognise me? Will she understand what's happening? So anyway, the guys in Virgin and the guys and girls, absolutely adorable, lovely. Obviously got lots of little bottles of Cava, so that always helped. And then I got home and she just Dan opened the door and he's like, wow you are bald.
Maybe he thought you were being dramatic.
I know
something.
And he's like, oh. And then Honey just looked at me and she's like, rock and roll.
Oh, so she did acknowledge it.
And I think she thought that I'd done it on purpose,
right? And just saved her head. And there's the innocence of children.
And that
no
was
judgment
it.
No.
And then since then she like, well, she's my best friend and she's the best person in the world, and she does not blink 2 eyelids, you know. She just
doesn't,
you know,
judge.
You look how you do, and I love you.
And your mum, So from that day, all those years ago, have you ever worn wigs or experimented with hair replacement or anything like that?
I did once, but that was just for a TV programme. I think it was Loose Women.
Right.
And it was just to say to other people, because I'm not interested in wigs. It doesn't bother me.
I know it's a personal choice. What's your reason for not being?
Do you know what? I just think I am who I am and I'm quite happy with the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if people want to judge me, no problem. But do you know what? Also, it's quite itchy.
Yeah, no,
it's a wee bit itchy.
I'm all about practicality. Yeah,
exactly. And I think, do you know what? Who would not want to get up in the morning and have a 2-minute shower?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But also, there's this empowering thing of like, it's okay to wear a wig if it's for you, but it's not like you don't want to be wearing a wig for other people.
No, exactly.
Like, and that's what it's about, don't you think? It's.
Well, yeah. Well, when I did it for Loose Women, what I did was I got this lovely wig and they said, would you like to wear it and talk about it? And so I just wanted to say to other people, if you want to,
it's there.
You do what you want to do and you can get it from here and you can do this personally.
And that goes back to like what you said about helping other people and telling them about options and educating them.
You can do whatever you want. Personally, I'm happy. I don't care what anyone thinks about me.
And have you faced negative reaction about hair loss?
Oh, yeah. I think my favourite one was I was in West Hampstead and this guy was in a white van and he was driving up. He wound down his window and he said, I would say the proper words. He went, you bald
In Hampstead, blimey.
Biatch, I know. You bawled biatch. I was like, oh, right, okay. And then it was a red light.
How awkward, how socially awkward. So yeah, he'd been an absolute twat and now he was stuck there.
So I just went up, knocked on the window and I was like, sorry, do you want to say that again?
Yeah. And so he thought he was going to drive off. Yeah.
He didn't. He was just like looking forward. I could see his eyes going, please go to green, go to green, go to green.
How weird that he did that, because I don't get the fulfillment he would get from
well,
that.
Do you know what? He obviously had nothing else better to do in the day. And so I just said to him, when I got the window down, because his mate wound down the window, and I said, you know what? I'm Scottish. I've got 2 second-hand black belts. I don't care if I'm bald. And also, I've got my period, so I win. And he was like that. No, make her stop. Make the lady stop. I was like, yeah, don't ever do that to me again.
See, this is why I think you're a good guest for the podcast, because... because you're Scottish.
Yeah. No, that always wins. We win.
Lots of people listening want advice on how... Because confidence isn't about losing weight or getting an expensive car or designer clothes. Confidence is about getting something at the core. And even if you don't consider yourself confident, it takes a lot of acceptance to showcase the authentic you. And you do leave the house every day as the authentic you. So how do you get to that point where even if you're facing abuse for your appearance, you carry on regardless? Because that's hard.
Well, I don't think it is hard. I get up every morning. I don't care what anyone thinks. I just look at my daughter and I think, do you know what? I'm the luckiest person in the world. I don't care what I look like. I've got the best friends. I've got, you know.
So you think support network's a big thing?
Support network is massive. Yeah. You know what? My neighbour downstairs, I know that every single morning I'll get a hello. I know that the neighbour next door will, like, I'll get a hug.
That simple interaction.
A hug, a cuddle, you know. I've been through bankruptcy, lost my hair, lost my mum, lost all my grandparents.
It's a lot of bereavements.
A lot of bereavements, but you know what? I get up every morning and then I just think I'm lucky and I want to give my daughter the best life that she could possibly have. And also my friends.
Yeah, it's like I feel like you practice a lot of gratitude. And you have a good perspective on life. And is sport been a big part of your life?
I run a lot.
Yeah, that's what from my stalking, that's what I thought. Are you headphones on, a couple of K, or you sprint? What do you do?
What's about 5K.
Oh, wow. Okay, you're impressive. That's good.
Not really. But then I sort of walk, and then I also I've got, like, my friend's dogs. I take my friend's dogs out. I love animals. I absolutely adore animals. So if I can take them for a run or something like that... I think gyms are a wee bit too expensive.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes a bit intimidating.
Yeah, I think I'm extremely, I can be positive when I'm out and about, when no one's looking, I've got a wee hat on. Mm. But when I go to a gym, I do feel a little bit intimidated. I think that's the only time I feel intimidated.
Yeah. What helps you feel positive?
Dogs, cats, happy people. And great music.
What do you listen to when you run?
When I listen to, I still listen to Run with the Wolves by The Prodigy.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. It's kind of like amazing songs to listen to, but also heartbreaking. But it always makes you laugh and smile. And other than that, what else do I listen to? Or anything, my daughter. My daughter just like...
Because she's cool and young.
The Killers. I think The Killers, we do I'm the Man, because I think I am the man sometimes.
And with the running and stuff, like, has it helped you? Do you ever set any, like, I don't know, I know you do a lot for charity. Do you sort of set goals and aims and
no
do
goals.
Charity runs? Or like, no, you don't have like a focal point or anything like that?
I did the Three Peaks Challenge. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, of course I have.
Have you done it?
Bloody hell no. Like, I'll run like 5K at the park run and want a medal for that. Like,
so it's 3 mountains in 24 hours.
Yes, it is.
And I'm scared of heights.
Oh my God, you just cracked
it
me up.
It was just absolutely the worst thing I've ever done. But it was, I mean, we got so much money for Mind Charity.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. So, and euphoric feeling at the end?
No.
Oh. I love the honesty. Listen, you're so self-deprecating, so I know you won't even let me say this, but you are the title of the podcast. You are an extraordinary person.
And don't make me cry, because honestly, I...
No, you really are.
I'm going through the menopause, so it's all cracking up.
You're
now.
Kind of not Scottish, you're British, because that British people are self-deprecating. And, you know, I do know people that are affected by alopecia but aren't kind of out there. And you know, some people are shaving, like men, for example, are shaving their head every day to hide it. Some women, people are working with them for years and they don't know they're wearing wigs and things like that. And, you know, even if you don't feel like you are, like you are this beacon of light for people, not just of alopecia, like you are that person for me. Like I've can't sleep sometimes at 4 a.m. and I look at your feed.
Gills
no.
up.
Yeah, she'll be up with a cat.
She'll be up.
Yeah. I haven't got a cat.
Another picture of me and the cat.
But you,
you can borrow her.
But even if you're not actively trying to be, you are. And I just wondered, like, you know, we're coming to the end of the episode. For all the anonymous, invisible people that are going through this and don't want anyone to know, and it's like their dirty secret when it shouldn't be, like, what's your kind of message to them? Because they can't really reach out because it is their secret. And you've been there and you're a trailblazer, you are.
I would say, do you know what? Life is so extremely short and I understand that some people want to cover things up and are embarrassed. Mm.
Shame's a big thing, isn't it, in society?
Yeah,
shame.
But personally, you know, when I go to, like, the shops or I go to Sainsbury's or Tesco's or something, there's always one person that will say, this is a wig, girl. And they want to, like...
Yeah, and are you shocked or you feel
no,
you
No, I'm just like... Or? But I love the fact that they want to tell me.
They want to connect with you. Does it do your head in sometimes?
Well, no, not in the slightest, but it does my head in the fact that they don't want to be open. Just go, you know, and I feel sad because I think, do you know what? You're beautiful and you're wonderful. But I understand that there's a bit of shame or they're embarrassed about the way they look. And I just want to say to them, do you know what? You rock. We all rock.
Yeah.
We've only got one life. You just like, if you want to cover it up, you want to wear a wig, you want to cover up the way you look, you want to wear makeup, whatever you want to do, do it. I don't wear makeup. I don't wear a wig. I am who I am. And I've got great friends. And I just think if I can do something great for other people, then I win.
Mask. Do you know what? That has just ended the podcast so well and summarised everything. Well, I'm really looking forward to seeing your documentaries. It's going to be on BBC One. It's going to be out soon.
January.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we can, if we want to follow you on Twitter.
It's just Gail Porter.
Gail Porter. What about Instagram? What's your name?
Instagram, I am Gail Porter. Twitter, Gail Porter. Phone number is, no, I'm joking.
Well, you have been an extraordinary guest, so thank you very much. Thanks for listening to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show where you got this, or share on socials.